We've all heard the old saying about catching somebody a fish versus teaching them to fish, but what happens to advisors when you can do both? We'll find out on this episode of Shift Shapers.
Change either paralyzes or energizes. The choice is yours. You're listening to the Shift Shapers podcast. You're about to learn firsthand from businesses and entrepreneurs who have successfully shaped the shifts in their industries. Get ready to become the change you want to see. This episode is brought to you by Shift Shaper Strategies. In sales, if you confuse, you lose. Clarify your message so you win more clients, crush your sales goals, and build your practice. Learn more at shiftshaperstrategies.com. And now, here's your host, StoryBrand Certified Guide and Chief Transformation Strategist at Shift Shaper Strategies, David Saltzman.
We've all heard the expression, if you catch a fish for somebody, they eat tonight. If you teach them to fish, they eat forever. And that's kind of an interesting metaphor for what we're going to be talking about today, because there is an interesting argument that helps advisors by giving them both a fish and a fishing pole. And that kind of motif was designed by our guest today, Daniel Corliss, who's a principal at DC Advisory, and he's going to tell us all about it. Hi, Daniel.
Hey, David. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. So let's start with a level set. From your vantage point, what's the problem that needs to be solved?
Yeah, so great analogy on the fish and the fishing pole. I think the problem is that we're still living in a very status quo world when it comes to how we're purchasing healthcare services, you know, how we're financing those purchases. And obviously the most, you know, the popular way to do that is through an insurance policy. The problem with that is there's a lot of waste, a lot of fraud and abuse that happens in those environments. And we work with brokers, other agencies, and other consultants to help them understand that the vehicle that they can use to finance those services for healthcare can look much different and be much more efficient. And so what we've done is basically kind of thrown the box away and said, look, we're going to help you build health plans rather than purchase insurance or place insurance policies for your clients.
So does that make you kind of a broker's broker?
Absolutely. That's a term that we use a lot as the broker's broker or managing general consultants. We used to say that we're a quasi-GA or general agency. That doesn't really fit because we're not just selling financial products or services or policies and then kind of disappearing after the sale. We're staying very hands-on after the implementation of the plan that we help build and design. And we're helping manage risk. We're helping manage, you know, expectations. We're helping manage the vendor relationships and just, you know, the whole ecosystem needs management after the sale. And there's a lot of agents and agencies out there that don't understand that part of this business.
So are you working predominantly in the self-funded plan universe?
Yes, 100% in the self-funded universe. I have never written a fully insured policy in my life, in my career, ever.
Well, congratulations. The rest of us who have can show you the scars someday over an adult beverage, I guess. So I'm a broker and I don't know what I don't know. I want to get into partially self-funded plans or self-funded plans, pick your nomenclature. And do I just call you guys up and say, hey, I need help? And you kind of ride shotgun?
Yeah.
How does that work?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. Usually we find people through referrals and, you know, just kind of through being a part of this community, the group health insurance and self-funded community. So we get a lot of referrals and names passed to us. We don't do a ton of marketing, so we're still very boutique. But yes, we have brokers, producers, agencies reach out to us via, you know, phone call or an email. And our approach is very bespoke every time. You know, we start with, you know, what are you currently doing? What does your current book of business look like? What markets are you in? What kind of products and services are you currently selling? How do you picture us working together and seeing us help you with that business? And then we just kind of go from there. So it's never one size fits all, or it's never the same approach. It's really, what problems are you currently experiencing? And where do you want to be in 2, 3, 4, 5 years? And we're usually explaining the value of building a more self-funded, sustainable book of business. And usually that conversation is anchored heavily on less attrition, you know, less turnover in your book of business. You know, the small group fully insured market has traditionally been very unstable. You know, you got your big broker houses, you know, constantly swapping clients year over year. And it's just very much a who can get us the lowest premium conversation. But once you start looking at, you know, self-funding and implementing those self-funded strategies, it becomes very close. You know, rather than talking to that client, you know, maybe four times a year, you know, each quarter with quarterly reports and just kind of checking in every once in a while for coffee, we're talking to our clients and our producers' clients on a weekly basis, if not daily, if there's a bunch of, you know, issues arising and things like that, we're there constantly. We're in constant communication throughout the year, constantly adjusting things to make them better, streamlining our approach. And that keeps relationships very close. Even if something goes wrong, terribly wrong within the health plan, the fact that your client knows that you are there immediately to pick up the ball and tackle those problems and, you know, get things done, they see that and they feel that. It's much different than just spreadsheeting and negotiating for lower renewal rates every year. It's much different.
Which begs the question that I know everybody's asking, and then we'll get back into the kind of how this all works, which is, whose client is it anyway? Does this become your client now? Or do, if I'm a broker, do I lose a client? What's that part of the mechanic and the relationship like?
Yeah, that's part of the beauty of it. It never becomes our client. We put that in writing. You know, we never become the AOR, BOR of those relationships. And so we're just kind of working on the back end at a higher level, helping the producer team, the account management team, or the agency as a whole better manage, again, the health plan, the expectations, and the risk. We even have some of our agency partners assign us, you know, emails under their domain so that we look and feel like we're a part of their team. So, and we very much are a part of their team. You know, we're working with their account management and, you know, the TPA and all the other vendors on a daily basis. And they know us just like we know them, and they know their client. So we're very heavily involved. But no, we don't take the relationship. We don't put the relationship at risk. We never bid against one of our partners' relationships. And we put that in writing. We also put in writing that we disclose every dollar that we make, whether it's from the client, whether it's from stop loss or any vendor relationships, which we don't really make anything on vendor relationships where everything is very transparent, but we put that in writing. So if one of our broker partners wants to audit how we're being paid, we fully disclose everything. Well, it's pretty much the law now anyways, but we happily do it.
So that begs the next question, which is, okay, how do you guys get compensated?
Yeah, so there's three ways that we get compensated. And one of them is just your very straightforward, traditional PEPM. So depending on the size of the group, and the level of complexity that it might be to manage that group based on network design and the potential risks that are in that group. So we look at everything from, you know, the census to any claims data if we have it. So we kind of know what we're probably getting into as far as workload. And we set a very, what I think is reasonable PEPM, somewhere usually between $5 and $15, depending on the size of the group. And then I think this is kind of funny that I'm fully disclosing my fees on this podcast, which is great. I don't think too many people do that. But so that's our PEPM model, somewhere between 5 and 15. We rarely stray outside of that, but we actually have gone lower and we've gone higher in some very few instances where we have like a really small group.
Before you get to number two, that just becomes part of the fixed cost of the plan?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. And then depending on how we're placing stop loss, you know, the type of contract or what the best fit for the client is, we might take up to 2.5% commission on the stop loss contract, but we never go over 2.5. And sometimes we'll just waive it completely because, as you know, when you set override commissions on stop loss, it can actually be adverse to the client when you could just say, well, we'll just take a little bit more PEPM on the fixed costs to kind of balance that out. And it actually is way more advantageous for the client. It's much better for them as far as their risk. And sometimes on the pharmacy benefit management relationship will take a per script fee, and that's $2, and that's it. So we've never gone above or below that. It's a $2 per script fee. We've waived that probably 50% of the time. So those are the three ways we get paid, and that's how much we get paid.
And now, a word from our sponsor. It's a fact. Salespeople and organizations lose opportunities because they don't clearly communicate their value. In today's market, your story is your message. It should be crystal clear, perfectly arranged, and precisely targeted to attract the clients you want. As a certified story brand guide, we use the exclusive SB7 process to create that story and the websites and collateral that deliver it. If your message isn't cutting through the noise, we can help. Visit us at shiftshaperstrategies.com to learn how we can help you find, clarify, and deliver a message that wins clients, crushes sales goals, and builds your practice. In sales, if you confuse, you lose. So learn more and schedule that call today at shiftshaperstrategies.com. That's shiftshaperstrategies.com. And now, back to our discussion.
So if I'm an advisor and I don't have expertise under the roof about self-funding, you guys essentially become my self-funding department.
Correct. Yeah. We consider ourselves subject matter experts on self-funding. Self-funding is a big ball of wax. Again, it's we're not doing ASO, or we're not selling into some pre-existing program where there's already a TPA and there's already a PBM and medical management and all the other vendor relationships are just ready to go. Everything that we build is bespoke for that client, for that broker relationship, based on their needs, based on their budget, based on their membership, based on their geographical location. It has a lot to do with the network arrangements that we set up, and sometimes just culture. Sometimes we know that a certain culture of a health plan, an employer group, is best suited for that. You know, you want a similar culture in that administrator partner to kind of match the way they do business. And so there is no one size fits all in self-funding. At least I don't think there is. I think everything should be built soup to nuts and from scratch for each client. And so that's what we do. We have various administrative partners, various vendor partners, various stop loss partners, everything under the sun, because it has to be that way. It has to be bespoke. It has to be custom every single time. And a lot of people kind of snap at me or yell at me and say, well, that's just so inefficient. Like, how are you guys managing all that? You know, it just seems like a lot of work. Yes, it is a lot of work. It should be. That's how we should be managing these health plans, by doing a lot of work. And we have great technology today that allows us to do things more streamlined and efficiently. But guys, we got to get back to doing the work. That's the only way that we're going to change this industry, change how we access healthcare, and change the way that we're building these health plans for our clients. So that's the way we do it. And I think we're going to stay boutique for quite a while because of that.
In your experience, let's go back to kind of how this works. Do brokers approach you with, hey, I've got a case that I need to handle? Or is the relationship different in that they bring you in and let you kind of go through their book and try to identify clients who might be candidates for self-funded plans?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both, but that you're correct in that usually what we hear is, hey, I have a case. I have a group that might be ready for self-funding. And it always starts as, you know, can we get stop-loss quotes? So we kind of, when we start with a relationship, they kind of think of us as a quoting mill for stop-loss. And that's usually how it starts. And then we show them that, hey, we have access to markets where we can get competitive stop loss, and we're happy to, you know, show that to you and prove that to you, but that's not what we do.
Well, it's also the wrong place to start a conversation about a client being self-funded.
Yeah. So that's usually where it starts. And so then we have to, you know, once we get some quotes and some competitive underwriting, which typically we're pretty good there, we'll say, hey, here's a stop loss quote, but here's also a plan proposal, you know, what we might recommend, how this might look for this client, you know, with all of the administrators and vendor partners and kind of what this ecosystem might look like. And then they usually, it's like, oh, this is great. You know, I think this might work. Thank you. And then the discussion becomes, great. Well, now we can help you implement it. We can help you with the vendor management, making sure that the onboarding calls and open enrollment and everything like that goes smoothly. Then we'll help you after that for the next year or two. So once they see that it's much more of a long-term hand-holding approach, I think they feel a lot more comfortable that they didn't just pay us $5 to $15 PEPM just to get a quote. Yeah, that's what we do.
What about TPAs? Do you also help them shop for an appropriate TPA for a case?
Yeah, absolutely. We'll help them. There's always new TPAs and new vendor partners popping up all the time, and they get bought and sold all the time. So a TPA that you really liked a year ago or 2 years ago might be completely different now. And the ones that you like now might be completely different in 2 years. And so we're always talking about not putting all your eggs in one basket. And for those reasons, this is a very fast developing, heavily evolving industry that we're in. But yes, we will evaluate new TPA relationships with our partners all the time if we haven't already been introduced. Or maybe it's a TPA that we've known about for years, but we haven't been back in touch with them for a while. And so, hey, maybe we need to revisit where they're at today. Because again, the solutions that some of these vendor partners, administrators are developing and innovating on a monthly, yearly basis, it's incredible. The rate and the speed at which we're developing this industry is so fast. And so there's a lot of work that has to go into just evaluating partnerships.
Talk about data analytics. What do you guys bring to the table? How do you help the advisor understand what that data looks like and what it means, and how to make intelligent plan decisions based on that on a going forward basis?
So important to have access to data, to timely data, accurate data, and then know what to do with that data. Depending on like the administrator partner, they all have different solutions as far as ways to access that data. So it might be like there's like DeerWalk and Springbuck and, everything in between. And some TPAs have their own proprietary data management warehouse or system. And no matter what the case, it doesn't really matter who's giving us the data, right? It just has to be accurate and we have to be able to get it timely. And if we have that, then yes, very important to be able to dig into that data and interpret it. So getting the data is just the first step and you've barely scratched the surface. Once you have the data, knowing what to do with it, pharmacy data, which one of these tier two or tier three drugs could be, sourced through like an international 90-day program where you're saving, 50, 70% on tier two and tier three drugs, on the specialty and infusion side, J codes and J code blocking. I just helped a TPA, I think it was last week, set up a program, a brand new program that they didn't have before on how to set up J code blocking for various PBMs and network arrangements where they could be steering the ship and providing those savings for their whole book of business for all their clients. And the way that stuff like that has to be handled very carefully, but it's very important to look at the data first to know how you need to handle it as far as risk mitigation goes. But yes, we're on top of that every week, David. Most people get up in the morning and get their coffee and they read the newspaper. I'm reading trigger reports, pre-certs, and case management reports every morning with my coffee. So I'm always looking at data.
Are you also providing tools that help some of the employees become better consumers, whether it's a concierge service or access to lower cost, higher quality, outpatient medical testing, et cetera? Do you also build those things into most of your plans?
Yeah. Again, that has to be bespoke for that member population. But yes, we definitely have to drive consumerism in healthcare. It's going to take all of us to do that. But there's, various ways, shapes, and forms that we do it. We have a great domestic medical tourism program that we've set up for anybody who needs anything from orthopedics to general surgery to cardiac surgery. We work with some really great partners on that end. I mean, we're saving tens of millions of dollars a year on those surgeries alone and everything else. I mean, members don't know what they don't know. So you really have to put it in front of them, whether it's using, your mobile apps, sending them push notifications, sending them emails, even making phone calls. If you have a medical management team that can even make phone calls and take a look at chronic conditions and you know, the cases and the diseases that some of these folks are dealing with and kind of have a proactive outreach campaign. That works really well in some environments too. So everything under the sun, David, it really depends on the group. But yes, we have those as well.
And that's a great place to end our conversation today. But we do hope you'll come back because I think this is going to be a growth industry. There are so many advisors trying to do partially self-funded plans who've never done them before, who don't really understand them, who don't understand ERISA, who don't understand plan documents, and they need somebody to kind of help them along. Daniel Corliss, principal at DC Advisory. Daniel, thanks so much for sharing your expertise with us today.
Thanks, David. It was awesome being here.
The Shift Shapers podcast is a production of Shift Shaper Strategies and may not be reproduced or quoted in whole or in part without our express written permission. Copyright 2020, all rights reserved.